All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are here this evening on the Rattlesnake Broadcasting Network to pay tribute to an actress by the name of Carrie Fisher, who passed away earlier today. And we all know her in the most famous role that she was in was Princess Leia of the Star Wars franchise. But there, a lot of people, including myself, have probably a good bit to learn about her career. And we'd also like to take this time tonight to kind of share our thoughts on her impact that she had on a lot of us as fans. Also, we'd like to take the opportunity to discuss, you know, the fact that it's tough to see your I don't want to say idols, but it's tough to see the people that you kind of grew up with as part of your fandom pass on. So this evening, Ronnie Adams of the Screaming Boy Podcast, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And the man who's going to kind of guide us through this discussion this evening is the patriarch of the Rattlesnake and Broadcasting Network. His name is Mark Rattlesnake. Sir, thank you for joining us this evening. And the floor is yours.
Well, thank you, Jesse. Yeah, I wanted to Carrie Fisher tonight. I not only appreciated her as an actress, but Carrie Fisher, it's weird because I didn't think about it too much before, but it definitely started to occur to me after I read her nonfiction biography, Wishful Drinking, that she really is sort of the archetype for types for the, you know, the child actor, the celebrity royalty, as we like to call it. Because she checked all the boxes. She was in very famous roles. She famously had a drug habit. She's had mental illness, specifically bipolar disorder. She's had very, very public falls from grace, we'll call them. She's been the picture of and the sort of an idol that people looked up to and fantasized about creepily. But she's also been the subject of ridicule. Mm-hmm. And we don't talk about it a lot. You know, we tend to sort of use and abuse celebrities, so to speak. You know, we love them when they're making us happy, but when we no longer have any use for them because they're having troubles, you know, we cast them aside. Margot Kidder comes to mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't remember if Shelley Duvall had mental health problems too, but I remember, you know, Shelley Duvall was a very famous actress for a while. And does anyone even know who the hell I'm talking about at this point?
Yeah. Shelley Duvall was, go ahead, Ronnie.
Oh, The Shining. She played Olive Oil in the Popeye yes. movie. Yeah. She had, if not then, but she definitely now has some mental issues.
Right. And so I'm stepping somewhat out of my role as a zany podcast host. and I'm going to put, to a degree, I'm going to put on my mental health hat. It's a hat that I wear professionally in real life. As I've said before, I'm a licensed clinical social worker, which means I have a master's degree in social work, and then two post master professional years getting my license, and for now 6 years, going on 6 years, I've been working in correctional mental health. So I've seen every breath of crazy there is to see, short of, you know, the real serious self mutilators that you see in prison. That's a story for another day. So I absolutely want to talk about the greatness that was Carrie Fisher, some of the great things she accomplished, not just as Princess Leia, though. Obviously, you know, I wouldn't know who the hell she was if she wasn't Princess Leia. But that's, I think, to honor her memory is to talk about things besides Star Wars. And that's really how I want to treat this show tonight as, hey, Carrie Fisher was a full person. She did great things. She did okay things. She's had terrible things happen to her in her life. And memory by looking at all of it as best we can. And I'm reminded of all of these things from her show, her one-woman play that she did that was based on her autobiography called Wishful Drinking. Because in it, she talks about the fact that her mother was Debbie Reynolds. Her father was Eddie Fisher. These were both very famous people, actor and singer, respectively. And while it gave her personality, it gave her talent, it gave her opportunity, it also contributed to her mental illness. It contributed to her alcoholism. It contributed to her substance abuse. And let's be frank, and I think this is as good a place to start as any, it contributed to her death. She was 60 years old when she died today. And I'm reminded of some other recent deaths over the past couple of years. Notably, and this is going way in a different direction, but The Ultimate Warrior, formerly of WWF fame, and for 5 seconds, WCW. You know, you couldn't get much more polar opposite from each other than Carrie Fisher, actress, Princess Leia, author of Postcards from the Edge, and the ultimate fucking warrior. And yet they both died relatively young. This is 2016, and you have two examples of people who damaged their body beyond comprehension and died at an age you're not supposed to die at. Not in 2016, not at 60 years old. In comparison, my parents, who were not substance users, there's some mental illness there, but as you can tell if you've listened to me long enough, but in all seriousness, neither one of my parents abused drugs. Neither one of my parents drank heavily. They didn't do steroids, obviously. And they're 70 now. They've probably got another 10 years. And, you know, and before them, my grandparents lived to their 80s. And none of them with a picture of health. So I guess what I'm trying to get at is what I want to talk about tonight is, sure, we'll talk about Princess Leia. We'll talk about some of this other stuff. But I don't think it would do the woman's memory justice in to not recognize the fact that she had all this other stuff going on too. And that's not to say that these are necessarily bad things, you know, that they're only bad things. But if there's one thing I got out of Wishful Drinking, rewatching it again tonight, it's that if this woman seemed to have only one wish, it would be that people saw her as Carrie Fisher and not just as Princess Leia. You know, we talked about the objectification of a gender, of women specifically. Imagine being objectified as a character. This is all we see you as. And not even just that character. Two images of that character. One of which has become a sexual fantasy. And having to live with that. So not to be a bummer, not to be a downer, but I don't think I could do this show, and I don't think I could talk about this subject without recognizing the fact that while it would be fun to say, oh, Carrie Fisher, you in that metallic bikini, you know, from Return of the Jedi, hotsy totsy, and not put myself in her shoes as the person who then has to live with everything that came after that.
Yeah.
So I've kind of laid out a lot there. I'm going to kick it back to Ronnie here. Just kind of your initial responses, thoughts. Do you now want to, jump out of this podcast quickly?
No.
Go ahead, sir.
Just my thoughts on her, and
we don't have to be so, we don't have to be so formal. Just whatever comes to mind.
Carrie Fisher was, I mean, like, her death hit me kind of hard because, while you don't want to think of her as just Princess Leia, but that's who she was in my life. You know what I mean? Sure. I grew up as a Star Wars fan, you know, from a small child. And, so whenever I think about her, it always goes back to that. And then when I started getting older and watching different movies, she was a mysterious woman in Blues Brothers. And she, you know, later on, like we discussed earlier, she was in Family Guy. So, while I saw her as extremely talented, she was also, you always thought of her as extremely troubled. She was the butt of many jokes, as far as troubled goes. So, I mean, you know, it was kind of sad thing about it. And it was really cool to see her kind of find her way back into the limelight with the new Star Wars movies being released. And, you know, one of the news stories was, you know, she was getting in shape to, you know, working with a nutritionist and a trainer to get, you know, get ready for these new Star Wars movies and things like that. It was really cool to see that she, maybe she was like, she had turned around, but she was like ready to make a, you know, sort of a comeback into the everybody's homes again, because, you know, you really, later on in life, you kind of have to dig a little deeper to find out some things that she had done. So this one was a little hard on me.
Yeah. Well, when I look at Hollywood, and Mark, you laid out, you know, you kind of laid out her, you know, who her parents were. I mean, these were some big names in the entertainment industry. And growing up myself, you know, I always envied somebody who could be a son or a daughter of somebody that's established in the entertainment industry and has all this money rolling in. But one of the big tragedies of something like that is that it never seems to be something that is easy. It's not easy. Why do you have any opinion as to why we see so much dependency upon drugs or just even mental health issues in itself come out of that type of environment?
Well, wow, that's a loaded question.
tell us what's wrong with everything, Mark.
let me try to answer that simply. I think you have two co-occurring problems going on. Specifically in the celebrity world, you have to remember a celebrity is a commodity. I think saying it that way might put people off, but that's what they are. You know, we like to think of our movies and our music as art, but there's a reason why I do the kinds of shows that I do, because I recognize that they may be art on some level, but in 2016 and for many years now, art is commodity. Art is a product to be sold. And the people doing the selling want to keep the money rolling in. Now, that's easy to do if you build iPods. You just need to keep building iPods, you know? And then you build an iPhone, and then you build a tablet, and then you build a watch that nobody wants. You know, so when you're building widgets, it's very easy to build a better widget and keep the money going. But when your product is people, when you're selling people as such through music and movies or whatever, you have one small problem with keeping the product line moving, and that is people don't always cooperate. People don't always do what you need them to do. And so over the years, those who manage, those who handle, have become very practiced in keeping their commodities happy so that they'll perform. Mm-hmm. By the way, I'm totally now reminded of a Lewis Black joke about George W. Bush, if you'll allow me.
Please.
You know, he talked about performing for George W. Bush. I think it was a correspondence dinner. It was the one where they make fun of each other or whatever. Or he was performing for Congress or whatever. He was doing some sort of big performance where George Bush was supposed to be there. And they and one of his quote unquote handlers came to Lewis Black and said, "Can you edit your act such and such way where we're afraid he's not going to be able to handle it?" And Lewis Black was very much stuck on the idea of that George W. Bush had handlers. And he said, very funny, very famously, "What is he, a bear? Why does he have handlers?" And he did this whole routine about how, you know, in order to get George W. Bush to go anywhere, they have to get the meat, and they have to lure him to one room to another with meat in their hands. I'm not doing this justice. Go find it. It's hysterical. But that's kind of what I think about. Only take out meat and take out a very funny image of George W. Bush following meat around. Now, and trade it out with drugs and alcohol and put any number of actors there. That's part of it. They surround themselves, or they are surrounded by people who feed their egos, who feed their unrealistic view of the world. So they create this false sense of satisfaction and happiness, which then leads to another problem. And that is when you have, you know, one of the things that defines me as a person is my struggle. You know, it's something I talk to my wife about all the time. I've had somewhat of an uphill battle in life, and some more so than others, some less so than others. As my one friend likes to remind me, I was not born a poor black child in the streets of Chicago. or as Chris Rock says, "I would love to be white," you know, so, okay. You know, I get it. I got a leg up, but it's still not been tremendously easy. I've made some mistakes, but it's given me wisdom and it's built my character and it's matured me. When you have people who will run ahead and iron out those hills for you so that you have no struggles, I mean, you know what I'm talking about? You see these people who with this completely ridiculous sense of the world. And some of the satisfaction I've derived from life has been, you know, succeeding through a struggle. And when there's no struggle to succeed, you'll start to create artificial things to make you happy. And as those artificial things work less and less, you'll try to create more of them, better of them. And then eventually you just give up entirely and you start doing it with chemicals.
Yeah.
So with that being said, if you look at Carrie Fisher's life, she had a really odd upbringing. You know, she had a mother and a father initially who raised her a certain way. I mean, she talks a lot about this in Wishful Drinking, and I'm going to keep referring back to it. It's her story to tell, not mine. But I will say that if you know, just one of the things she talked about in Wishful Drinking was her mother kept telling her that she should have a baby with one of her stepfathers. Because he had nice eyes.
Wow.
And she tells it in a very funny way, but just think about that. You know, a mother who's so divorced from reality that she would make a suggestion like that. And it doesn't matter that she said, "Well, I thought you could get artificially inseminated by injecting your, you know, semen into your arm." And that's what she was referring to. It's very much funnier when Carrie Fisher tells it.
Uneducated.
But just think about that. I mean, think about your parents, think about your upbringing. And just think about somewhere out there was a young lady whose mother was suggesting that she be artificially inseminated by one of her stepdads because he couldn't have kids and had nice eyes.
Wow.
Wow.
That might change your psyche just a smidgen.
Might screw you up a little bit.
So, those are the best answers that I can give you, Jesse. I think between the skewed view of the world, the yes men, and the artificially created happiness, and then, you know, the need for substances to fill the cracks, basically, to help deal with the pain. I think that's where so many of our celebrities that have had troubles, where they get it from. You know, I think about like Drew Barrymore and, you know, some of the ones we talked about before. And just as an aside, you also have to remember we're all not wired the same. We have, you know, some of us who, you know, exposed to the same stimuli and the same struggles will respond differently. So, you know, where maybe a similar situation, you know, caused a mental break in Margot Kidder, the same situation might not have affected somebody else the same way. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of variables here, but I would say that's the best answer in a very general sense that I can give you.
Does she mention in that documentary about her trying to cope with bipolar disorder? I mean, that was...
Yes.
That had to have been tough, right?
Yeah. A bipolar disorder, but, you know, it's rapid mood swings, racing thoughts, impulsivity. You know, if classic bipolar, you have extremely low lows and very high highs. I remember one person who I was doing treatment with said, you know, bipolar disorder isn't the worst thing. The worst thing is when you use your powers for evil. I happen to like being manic when I can use my powers for good. I get my house super clean. but it can make for some terrible relationship building. I mean, she talks about her marriage to Paul Simon. And Paul Simon apparently wrote a series of songs about her that are painful to listen to when you realize they're about her. You know, I'm going to keep referring back to wishful drinking. She's like, she read one of the lyrics to one of his songs about her, and there was a pause, and she goes, "Yeah, folks, apparently I'm a bitch." So it's like we're all like, "Oh my God, Princess Leia, you goddess, you icon, you this, you that." Paul Simon's like, "You whore." you know, I have the Sam Kinison thing in my head now of, "You use me! You abuse me! I hope you slide into a gas truck and taste your own blood." There's a reason he says stuff like that. You know, you deal with some of these folks out there who, whether it's a personality or a mood disorder, who just suck the life from you. You know, just imagine dealing with somebody on an ongoing basis who you don't know if you're dealing with someone who is three steps away from throwing themselves in front of a bus or three steps away from throwing you in front of the bus.
Right.
And having to just live with that. You don't know. I used to, for people who are living with borderlines, I used to say, you know, it's like living with a tornado.
Yeah.
So, you know, poor Paul Simon.
Well, you know, it's just seeing her off camera, I've told you guys before that, you know, we just finished up a 4-part podcast on, I know it was one part for you guys, but split it up into 4 parts on the Star Wars. And I told you guys that I wasn't the biggest Star Wars fan, but you know, you name these characters and people know them right off the bat. Princess Leia was indeed one of the biggest characters to come out of that film and resonates to today, to where I was just thinking, you know, today about some of the impact that she had, just that character alone, the way she handled that character, the strong female character that she was. And I can remember my thoughts went to when Disney got a hold of the Star Wars property and all these princesses that they had built up over the years, and now all of a sudden we've got a new one, and it was Princess Leia. And I thought to myself, you know, she is such she just feels so different compared to all these other princesses that are coming in there.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you know, that to me, of course, was pretty much my extent to my knowledge of what Carrie Fisher had done until, of course, we get to the Wikipedia where we're looking at the films. As a matter of fact, friend of the show, Pat Mullen, mentioned one of the films that I absolutely love and forgot she was in, which was The Burbs.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
She played the wife of Tom Hanks in that movie, if I remember right. But anyway, Mark, early career, I mean, I was looking there, Shampoo, which is a film I've not seen. I don't know if you guys have seen.
I'm aware of it.
Okay, yeah. All right. Shampoo, and then we get, of course, Star Wars. You got anything you'd like to discuss in regards to her career? What other things she got into?
All right. I don't know if I mentioned it on air or if I said this before we went on air tonight, because we talked at length.
This is a 3-hour podcast. You guys will get to hear the last hour of it.
Yeah, pretty much. This is a 2-hour non-recorded podcast that we did. As I mentioned before, she's the daughter of Debbie Reynolds. And shortly into that relationship between Debbie Reynolds and Eddie Fisher left and went on to marry, among many other women, Liz Taylor. So she lived for many years with Debbie Reynolds and then a stepfather who was a shoe tycoon. I think, if I remember correctly, the way she told the story was that she had done some stuff as a kid, been in some things, but what I remember her talking about specifically was that her mother, Debbie Reynolds, took a job in a show in London and took Carrie Fisher out of high school and put her in the chorus. Which she talks about, in a very funny way. She says something to the effect of, because believe it or not, being in the chorus of a play is much more important than getting an education. She said sarcastically. But that then led to her going to, then led to her being in her mom's nightclub act, and they performed together in London. So then she was offered an opportunity to do her own nightclub act, and her mother said it would be better if you went to the London Drama School, which she refers back to when discussing Princess Leia and the on-again, off-again British accent.
I was wondering if we were going to mention that tonight.
Yes, apparently that's the fault of partially of the London School of Acting and partially the ineffectual direction of George Lucas. But that's a story for another day.
Imagine that.
Yeah. In any case, so from the London School of Acting, is really where her career starts. But like I said, she'd been in this and that and a bunch of other things, prior to. But Star Wars really was like her big break, in terms of films. I mean, prior to that, Shampoo's in 1975, and then she gets this gig in this science fiction fantasy film. And she becomes, a star, all over the world. She was in the Blues Brothers after that, then Under the Rainbow, Garbo Talks, The Man with One Red Shoe, Hannah and Her Sisters, Hollywood Vice Squad, one of my favorite movies of all time, Amazon Women on the Moon. as you guys mentioned, The Burbs. She was in When Harry Met Sally. I mean, she, Soap Dish. I don't know if you guys remember that movie. She's got some uncredited roles, like Hook and Austin Powers. She was in Scream 3. Mm-hmm. She was in something almost every year all the way through, next year's 2017 Star Wars movie, Star Wars Episode 8. And that's in addition to her television career. She's got a credited role here in Debbie Reynolds in The Sound of Children in 1969. And then again, like I said, almost every year she's been in something.
Wow.
A part here, a part there. I mean, I'm not going to read this whole thing.
Yeah.
But, I mean, she's been in everything from, like, you know, Laverne and Shirley to Ellen, Dr. Katz. You guys remember Dr. Katz?
I do. I remember, yeah. I hated the animation on that show.
Yeah, that would give you seizures. She's been on Smallville. We talked about the fact that she was Angela on Family Guy, who, you know, plays the she's mm-hmm. Peter's boss. She's been in Weeds, 30 Rock. She's been on, you know, she's voiced herself basically, and some other voices on Robot Chicken, the Star Wars episode. She's been in Entourage. She roasted Roseanne. She's an episode of The Big Bang Theory. And her last appearance on television was in 2015 on something called Catastrophe for 4 episodes.
she's been in
3 video games.
Wow. That's a very, I mean, she's prolific a very career.
Yeah, she's a very extensive career. And she didn't pigeonhole herself just into sci-fi, like, but that's where people knew her best from. Mm-hmm. And she was 21 years old when Star Wars released. So she was what, 1920 when it was being made or whatever, however old she was. And then, the excitement hits when she's, you know, when she's fairly young. And, so how do you handle that as a kid, you know, which is pretty much what you are at that age. Yep. And, you know, it's one of those things where it's so much to handle at such a young age. And
it's a lot to shoulder.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let us assume for a moment, it never went past A New Hope. It never went past the Star Wars. Mm-hmm. That's still a lot. You know, you're 21 years old and suddenly you're this worldwide icon and everyone loves you and everyone wants you.
Right.
And then 2 movies later, worse, you know, you know, like I said, you're the sexual icon. Cause I wouldn't necessarily have seen her as a sex symbol in that first movie. She's pretty covered up. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned that specifically.
Right.
Because apparently, according to her, according to George Lucas, the reason why she doesn't wear a bra is there's no underwear in space.
Makes sense.
George.
I will let you people watch Wishful Drinking to get the full explanation of that line. But yeah, George Lucas, there's no underwear in space. People wonder why I say he's terrible and doesn't know how people work. Anyway. She's also written a bunch of books. She wrote Postcards from the Edge, which got made into a movie, Surrender the Pink, Delusions of Grandma, Hollywood Moms, and The Best Awful There Is. And I feel like I read one of those. It might have been Postcards from the Edge or something else. I don't remember. I know I read one of her books, though. And it really was funny. I talked about Wishful Drinking, but she also wrote a book called Shockaholic. And then the Princess Diarists, which now that I know that they exist, she's script doctored. Which here's some fun trivia: she did doctored screenplays for Sister Act, The Last Action Hero, and The Wedding Singer.
Wow, Last Action Hero.
Wow, maybe she was what's wrong with that movie.
No, nothing wrong with that movie, Ronnie Adams. Nothing. Ronnie, Star mm-hmm. Wars. Star Wars, biggest film franchise ever.
One of, if not the biggest.
I mean, it has to be, right? There isn't anything else that touches it.
The only thing that I can think of people knowing a little better would be maybe Indiana Jones or the Harry Potter series. You know,
I don't know, man.
It doesn't matter who you are, whether you've seen it, whether you like it or not. You know Star Wars. You know it. You know Princess Leia. You know the roly bun looking hairdo that she had.
Yeah.
You know you know these things. My girlfriend has seen one Star Wars movie, and it was one of the prequels. And but she knows Star Wars, and you know. And when I told her, I said, Princess Leia died. She's like, oh my gosh, that's terrible. So she knows who it is, but mm-hmm. Like we said, you know, at such a young age, it's such a big, you know, something huge to shoulder. So, such a big role to fill, and you get there, and you realize that these people, you know, may or may not really like you for who you are, and you start getting that void in your life, and that hole that you feel.
I think I might have started this earlier about how off camera she seemed like such a firecracker.
Yeah.
That's the best way that I could describe it. The way she would come across, she seemed very honest. And Mark, I think you had said she did a play. It was a one person play.
Yeah. It's called Wishful Drinking, based on the book she wrote.
And it's about herself, right?
Yeah, Wishful Drinking basically is like a spoken word, one woman performance where, I mean, it seems like she's speaking extemporaneously. It also seems like she's just doing stand-up, but it really is a narration of some of the points of her life. You know, she begins by talking about the husband who died in, I think it was a husband, that died in her bed. Wow. And then her having to explain that to the police and their reaction back to her. You know, and then it goes into like the first part of the first major part of it is, you know, how she was raised and who her parents were. And she does this whole routine about like Hollywood inbreeding and, you know, like the multiple marriages of her mom and her dad. Which is really centered around the fact that her daughter and somebody and was interested in somebody else, and they didn't know if they could date because they weren't sure if they were related.
Jeez.
True story. And I think the line she used is, you're related by scandal.
That's not good.
And then she got into Star Wars. Which he opens with the line, you know, in 1976 or 7, yeah, 1977, George Lucas ruined my life.
Wow. And, wow.
And it's a funny line. It's meant to be funny. But what she's getting at, basically, is that, and she did not talk necessarily about the filming of the movie. She talked about the likenessizing of it. Think of it this way. Right? Put yourself in her shoes. So you're 21 years old and you're given this silly fantasy script and, you know, you need a job. You've dedicated yourself now to becoming a professional actress or actor, and you get this job and it's like, great. You know, who wouldn't want to be a feature role in a major motion picture? So she does it and she, you know, she doesn't retain any merchandising rights. She gets nothing out of it but the paycheck she was offered for the movie role.
Mm-hmm.
But what comes out of it is that the guy who put this whole thing together, this whole scam, does retain merchandising rights and sells the license everywhere to anybody to make anything. And so just imagine... And like, you know, as guys, we sometimes talk about, like, wouldn't it be cool to have your own action figure? You mm-hmm. want your own Ronnie Adams action figure? You want your own Jesse Starcher action figure?
Of course.
Well, I don't know what kind of special action it would have.
45 points of articulation.
Yeah. I don't have 45 points of articulation.
Figure out what that fifth one is.
There you go. That's what would make it an action figure. It's got more articulation than the human body. But now imagine you're a Pez dispenser. And now imagine you're a soap. And on the soap it says, lather yourself up, boys, and feel like a princess.
Oh, wow.
You know, and it just goes on and on and on. And now imagine, believe it or not, someone has made a sex doll of you.
Mm.
Man.
So that's where she's coming from with a lot of this. You know, I don't know at what point she started to have mental health problems, but I do know that, you know, bipolar disorder starts to show up in your late teens, early 20s. And when you consider, you know, she was in this like really intense affair with Harrison Ford during that period. And by the way, he was married.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she had this tumultuous relationship with Paul Simon.
Gosh.
And that, you know, combination of things. It is amazing she retained any degree of her sanity. Because as much as, you know, we talk about some of these other celebrities, find me the Megan Fox sex doll. Mm-hmm. Me the, what's her name? The broad from the Big Bang Theory. Kelly Kukuko. Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
Yeah, Kaylee.
Yeah. Yeah, Kaylee Cuckoo. You know, find me her sex doll.
Right.
So, throwing stuff like that out there. I mean, on the other side of it, she became like a spokesperson for mental illness. I'm just reading something. It said in 2016, Fisher its annual Outstanding Lifetime Achievement Award in Cultural Humanism, noting that her forthright activism and outspokenness about addiction, mental illness, and agnosticism have advanced public discourse on these issues with creativity and empathy. Which she joked about, by the way, that she's received more for being mentally ill than she ever did for her filmography.
Wow. You know, it is a coveted lifestyle, but man, I'm telling you right now, a lot of times the money is not worth the problems.
Right.
You know, I don't know too many kids that did not grow up dreaming to be a movie star at one point. And here she gets, you know, this is the role of our lifetimes, one of the roles of our lifetimes that she will always and forever be known as Princess Leia. And she's had an impact on so many people, but you wonder if she would trade that back in a second. I mean, just like Mark said there, George Lucas ruined my life. Would she have turned that role down? If she knew everything that was going to come, there's no way you would have known. I mean, there's no way. This is the 70s, for Pete's sake, and somebody coming to you with a sci-fi role. I don't think sci-fi was doing, you know, it was busting out the theater doors like it is nowadays, which Star Wars could be completely responsible for.
She actually joked about that.
Oh, yeah?
She said that, you know, she will occasionally at book conventions, quote-unquote, when she feels lonely. The joke. And sort of. But the question that she gets asked is, did you know Star Wars would blow up the way that it did? And she totally makes this huge sarcastic joke about that. We all knew it was going to be a wild success. George didn't know because we kept it from him. You know? Fucking no clue. You guys got to remember. As Jesse said, 1977 and 76, whenever they started filming this thing and she got the gig, they had no idea Star Wars was going to turn into what it did. Just thought like I said, I think Harrison Ford was like a carpenter at the time. Like, he was like building movie sets. I don't think Mark Hamill was even the first choice for the role. I think whoever casting director he had been working with at the time wanted somebody else for it. I know somebody else was up for Harrison Han Solo. So this was just another gig. And even when it did well opening weekend, if you've ever watched any of the Star Wars documentaries, you know, they talk about how George Lucas wasn't even sure after the first weekend it was still going to be in theaters. They're like, okay, you know, what do you think? You know, your movie's a huge hit. And he was like, well, let's see what happens in a few weeks. And it became a part of the cultural lexicon. Yeah, you know, it's such a weird phenomenon to be a part of.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't say whether or not she'd want to give it all back to. I'm sure she would have liked to retain ownership of her likeness. You know,
yeah.
a little piece of the merchandising, or at least some say so as to what it could be used for.
Right.
But I think people know that now. You know, I don't think you can do a Megan Fox or a Kelly Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs sex doll, because they probably have lawyers saying, you know, likeness, you know, there's some retention of your likeness so that it can't be used for these things.
Right.
But no, not back then.
Yeah.
What a weird trip that must be. See, she actually talked about like going to one con and seeing a some sort of her in the metal bikini where you could, you know, where she was like, you can see up my skirt.
Yeah, it had to have been something that would have been just the hardest thing to try and deal with. I couldn't even imagine people who hit the lottery the next day and their life changes. That's kind of like what this is. Her life has changed. The good thing is she stuck with her craft. If it was me, I probably would have ran and hid at the amount of, you know, the amount of fame. I'm one of those recluse guys. I could be a billionaire, but you're never going to find me just because I want to make sure. That's where what I would have done. But you could tell that just the way she handles herself, that's not who Carrie Fisher was.
She's a very creative, funny person.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it takes a lot of courage to say, you know what? I'm going to put my life on the stage, and I'm going to make a movie about myself and all of just successes, but all the failures as well, and all the problems that I've had to deal with. That's a courageous woman. I do have a question for you, Mark. I mean, you got yourself a little girl there at home. Princess Leia, was that something that we're in a new age now where there's princesses all over the place. So, you know, I totally expect, you know, I wouldn't expect the same answer I would have got 3 years ago or something like that. But I mean, was Princess Leia a character that the little girl looked up to in any way?
My daughter looks up to any woman she sees on the boob tube. Doesn't really matter who it is. You know, if there's a screen full of men and one female character, that female character is my child's favorite. That is just the way she is right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's no discernible taste. It's just, I like girls, period.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's real quick plug for Carrie Fisher here, posthumously. Fisher's memoir, The Princess Diarist, was released in November of 2016. The book is based on diaries she kept while filming the original Star Wars trilogy in the late 1970s and early 1980s, which I would like to add to by saying, okay, here we go. Fisher revealed in another interview that she took cocaine during the filming of The Empire Strikes Back. Slowly, I realized I was doing a bit more drugs, losing my choice in the matter, she noted. In 1985, after months of sobriety, she accidentally overdosed on a combination of prescription meds and sleeping pills. She was rushed to the hospital, creating the turn of events that led to much of the material in her novel and screenplay, Postcards from the Edge. Asked why she did not take on the role of her story's protagonist, named Suzanne, in the film version, Fisher remarked, "I've already played Suzanne."
Wow. Yeah.
Here's another note, by the way, and I don't know if you want to talk about this now or we'll double back on it later, but apparently, and this is something she talked about in Wishful Drinking, she was at some point in her life, she was receiving electroconvulsive therapy, ECT treatments.
Wow. What? That's serious stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It basically, you get electric volts into your system and it starts to wipe away your memory.
Yeah.
So you don't remember why you're depressed anymore.
That's a bit unconventional. I mean, was that something? When was that? short when they said that was going on?
She discussed it in 2008, so it was prior to that.
Man, I don't know. and that's voluntary, right? I mean, that's her going up to somebody saying, okay, yeah, I want this. Not for me.
She said that drug use was her form of self-medication, using pain medications such as Percodan to dial down the manic aspect of her bipolar disorder. Drugs made me feel normal, she explained to Psychology Today in 2001. They contained me.
Hmm. I don't really know. It's, you know, bipolar disorder is a very serious thing. I know that. But it's something that people throw around, at least in my family. I don't say my family, but, you know, friends and family. What are you, bipolar? I mean, what are you doing? Are you bipolar or what? And I don't think I could recognize actually what a bipolar person is. I'm sure I know somebody. I just don't know that they are. I think of my wife's sister, I believe. I don't even know if she got diagnosed, but, you know, there's always some kind of a thought because she has her ups and she has her downs. So taking drugs to try and self-medicate, Mark, I mean, I'm sure you run into that a lot there where you're
every
at.
Day.
Every day.
Every day.
And that's pretty dangerous, correct? I mean.
Yeah.
I'm stating the obvious.
Nah.
But, I mean, really, have you seen any bad cases come your way? Anything crazy that you can think of where somebody tried to self-medicate and they were clearly doing it wrong?
Well, I mean, self-medication is a term that gets thrown around a lot. let's just call it what it is. It's drug use. Whether you're using drugs because, you know, the reason she's stating or because, you know, you just want to feel good. You want to feel better. Look, heroin's awesome, dude. Okay? Heroin is amazeballs. Here's the problem.
Here's the problem.
It never... Here's the problem with heroin in America. it's never as good as the first time you use it. So you have to keep using more and more of it. And there's actually a chemical reason why. So let's take a 10-point scale and say that you 10 points north and 10 point and negative 10 points south, okay?
Okay.
And normal, you know, normal just flat is 0. And let us take 3 different things. Let's take a cheeseburger. Let's take marijuana. And let's take whiskey. And then let's take heroin. Okay? You eat a cheeseburger, and it makes you 3 happy, right? Raise your happiness to 3.
Mm-hmm.
You know, effects of the cheeseburger wear off. You're back to 0 again. In order to kind of get that same level of happiness, you eat more and more cheeseburgers. And it has less and less of an effect each time you do it. Now let's drink whiskey. Whiskey takes you to 5. But you got to keep drinking more whiskey to get to that 5 again. And now when you're off the whiskey, you're starting to drop below 0. So just to get back to normal again, you got to drink more whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's take heroin, which takes you to 100 happy. Okay? Remember I said this is a 10-point scale.
Right? Right.
Well, this takes you to 100. When you get off the heroin, you drop considerably below 0. And it's the same repetition. Okay. You need more and more of it to get to just to get back to 0 again. And eventually, you know, you're shooting just bags of this shit all the time just to stay alive. Because there's also detox effects, you know. With benzos, with Xanax, Klonopin, opiates, heroin, you know, pain pills, etc., alcohol, you can get seriously sick and die if you don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
If you use too much of it, we have to give people drug tapers, essentially, Librium, when they come in all fucked up. To make sure they don't have a seizure and die.
Oh, wow. That's why they have methadone clinics or whatever.
I'm not.
Oh no, they still do. They have, you can still.
Yeah,
you can go get the juice.
Yeah, because of heroin and because of, you know, they have, it gives them that same sort of feeling, but it's not as deadly. So
now think about this. Right now, you boys want to go get yourself and, you know, go have a potty. You got to go, you know, go to your nearest corner, you know, go see the dope man. Take a chance getting arrested. Mm-hmm. You're a celebrity. You go to your doctor.
People throwing this stuff at you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's easy to get a hold of that.
And that's the thing is you don't have to dirty your hands on the illegal shit. You can go to a doctor and say, I have pain.
Right.
Get all the Percocet you want. You can get all the Oxycontin you want, all the Roxy you want.
I mean,
we, a couple of years ago here in Florida, they busted a bunch of doctors running pill mills. But we still have them. I mean, you know, they just document better now. You know, we have what they call pain clinics, which are basically high-class drug dens. Like, if you have legitimate pain, don't get me wrong. I mean, my mom just had to go in, you know, go into the hospital because she had pneumonia, and she was in some great degree of pain in her chest, and they gave her some painkillers because that's what we do. And once the pain wasn't excruciating, she stopped and she tossed the rest in the toilet. But a lot of people will convince themselves that they need it, and then have to keep getting like refills of the shit. And like I said, all you have to do is tell them I have pain. I got back pain. Who doesn't have back pain?
Right.
I've been fat most of my life. You don't think I have back pain? You know, but I don't take pills. Well, so
it's, you're building up a tolerance to this stuff, whether it be food, whether it be drugs or alcohol. And just like you said, it's never like the first time. So when you're building up a tolerance to this, you know, you need more and more and more, because just like you said, on a scale of 1 to 10, heroin makes you feel like 100, then it takes you to a negative 100 afterwards.
Right.
So to get to normal again, you take more, and then you stop being so normal, and you never get back to that positive 100. You're always at negative 90, negative 100, negative 150, and you're never right again. Whether it be pills, whether it be heroin, whether it be coke, whatever it is, these habits are hard to break because you just want to feel normal again. You want to fill that void that you've created in your life.
A lot of the guys that come into the jail wanting medication for mental illness have been using drugs for so long that they need that. They'll take anything just to not feel that way anymore.
Whatever it makes them feel, they just want to feel it.
Right. They don't want to feel the way they do without the medication. So right. they'll tell, you know, everyone's got bipolar disorder. I mean, some of them probably do. I mean, there's a lot more, believe it or not, to round this back to the subject at hand. There's a lot more people who have a lot in common mental health wise with Carrie Fisher, but she lived it publicly.
Mm-hmm. Right.
In a world where, I mean, you got to remember something, mental illness is still a very new thing in the sense that we, you know, 10, 20, 30 years ago, only crazy people had mental illness.
Right.
And I'm talking fluidly psychotic here. One flew over the cuckoo's nest kind of shit, which she also jokes about, by the way, in Wishful Drinking. And, you know, like we asked the question, like, do you have any history of mental illness? And you still hear people say, I'm not crazy.
Mm.
You know, like, okay, do you have any history of depression? Oh, all the time. All right. That would be mental illness, sir or ma'am.
Right.
You know, oh, I don't have any mental illness. I'm just depressed and anxious all the time. I do a lot of sighing at my job. I just, you know.
I can just hear you now.
Yeah. So I've learned to tell people just stop talking, keep it to 50 words or less, sometimes 10 words or less. We're up to the yes, no portion of this evaluation. Please don't elaborate.
Right.
I'm kind of a dick. But I got my job done, so. But I mean, like, you know, Debbie Reynolds, I'm sure, doesn't have a full understanding of mental illness, so she probably didn't know what was going on with Carrie for a lot of those years, mm-hmm. and just thought she was eccentric. I mean, being rich and famous gives you a lot of room to be nuts.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people, there's people around you to protect you, and you kind of have to just go big before somebody says, this has become untenable and it needs to stop.
You got to take a Howard Hughes before people realize there's something wrong.
Right. Because up to that point, you know, I mean, let's take another celebrity, you know, another celebrity meltdown. A very famous one, Britney Spears.
Yeah.
You know, look where that had to go before she finally got some help. And even then, you know, people were spinning it and surrounding her and protecting her from the truth and saying, oh, she's just tired. Yeah, she's shaving her fucking head because she's tired.
Has there ever been a point where Britney Spears has come out and said, okay, yeah, I have issues and I am owning what I've done and I want to be a poster girl to show that these things are real? No.
No.
That never happened. This is somebody who's – Carrie Fisher was somebody who lived that lifestyle and then came out and said, okay, I've got problems. We've all got problems. We need to try – I want to be the face of this to try and deal with it.
But look at the stigma that surrounds it and surrounded her after she said that.
All right. Well, hang on. To be fair to Brittany, leave Brittany alone.
Oh, my gosh.
Dailymail.co.uk, 2013. Quote, I turn into this different person. Seriously, bipolar disorder. Britney Spears opens up about suffering from social anxiety in her new documentary, I Am Britney Jean.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe she took a page out of Carrie Fisher's book then.
Maybe she did. I'm not looking that closely at this, but I was curious to see if she's ever actually fucking dealt with this at all.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of, especially women, looked at Carrie Fisher and said, if she can do it, I can be brave too. I also would not be surprised if somebody in the inner circle of some of these people said, hey, Carrie Fisher came out and, you know, and talked about her mental illness and look at her. They're giving her awards at Harvard. You should do that too. And maybe you'll sell a record.
Yeah.
God, entertainment industry is just so messed up, man. It's just full of, I don't know, untruths and yes men. It's entertaining to actually look at how messed up it is sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. I was just reading some tweets here, by the way. I'm going through and picking some people who had some nice things to say about Carrie after she had passed. There's a guy who actually quoted her here. It says, sometimes you can only find heaven by slowly backing away from hell. That's Carrie Fisher on Finding Happiness. Man, a lot of there's no way to overstate it, really, because a lot of people feel this, you know, this void in the world now that she's gone.
I want to quick read this. In her book, Wishful Drinking, Fisher wrote about the eventual obituary. I want it reported that I drowned in moonlight, strangled by my own bra.
Jeez.
I find that funny.
She has a wit, man. I mean, she anything that I've seen her in, when it comes to her being real and on camera, it seemed like she had this just almost unfathomable wit about her. Mm-hmm. She could be funny, sarcastic. Mark, I'm really interested. I want to watch this documentary you keep talking about. Is this something I can stream, or is this something you found?
I posted something on Facebook about Wishful. You know what it was? It was a playlist of just segments of Wishful Drinking and some other stuff.
Okay.
Right now, it's streamable on HBO. I don't know if you have that. But that's one place you can find. I just watched it on, you know, on demand and HBO. Maybe you could find, I think it's actually rentable on YouTube.
Okay.
That's another option. I don't know if it's on Amazon Prime or not. I haven't looked. I'm almost afraid to open up another window on my computer. So we've talked a lot about mental illness and her life in particular. I haven't really had an opportunity to talk about something positive, talk about what everyone's talking about. So I just want to say about Carrie Fisher and her role as Princess Leia that she was an equal to Luke and Han. And, you know, as a boy, there was no way I wanted to be that fag Luke Skywalker, but Han Solo was the shit. And he shot first.
You hear that, Ronnie, by the way?
Thanks. Thanks, Mark.
Yeah. All you fags with your lightsabers, give me a blaster in a gunfight. Okay. But seriously, folks, I was Han, all about Han. Had no interest in Luke. And I obviously did not want to be Princess Leia, but I always saw her as an equal to those two leading characters. Something that Robert Winfrey and I talk about on Damn You Hollywood, you know, the concept of the do-nothing heroine, where she's, you know, you have a girl in the movie because some producer wrote notes saying you have to have a girl in this, you can't have a complete sausage fest. You know, you have to have a love interest because Americans like romance.
Mm-hmm.
And she, you know, in a time where studios really, you know, I think things were quickly changing, but they were still, things were still somewhat ruled by the old studio system. You know, producers still kind of ran the show. Notes made movies. So that kind of a strong character, Princess Leia, really did break the mold and was something new and fresh and interesting. And I think, as Ronnie was saying before, I think that's a lot of the attraction for people to Carrie Fisher and that character. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, before Lara Croft and before Ripley, you know, before what we know to be the strong female hero, there was Princess Leia, who, mm-hmm, grabbed a gun out of Luke's hand and, you know, shot stormtroopers and was sarcastic. And she was this dainty little thing in a braless gown. And she's saying, Grand Moff talking, you stink. And, you know, Vader, you're on a leash. You know, she, and then even in the later movies, you know, she's the first in there to rescue Han in Jabba's palace. She's strangling Jabba. She's blowing up the skiff. You know, she takes a shot in the arm outside of, you know, outside the bunker on Endor. I mean, she has some great lines in that, in those movies.
Mm-hmm.
She,
Jesse.
I know exactly what she's saying in that scene too.
Yeah,
that's
I do too, actually.
It's really sad. I'm such a nerd. I know all the lines of those movies.
Just a quick aside. I saw a meme shortly before getting on here with a stormtrooper and his head was hanging low. And it said, I will never stop missing her. Mm. Think about that.
Oh, because they can't hit anything. <Yeah. laughs>
Anyway.
It's thunder once.
But only Imperial stormtroopers have that kind of precision. Thanks, Obi-Wan. You failed.
So I think it should go without saying, you know, it needs to be said that we owe Lucas, the editors, the people who rewrote that script, everyone who fixed it, and Carrie Fisher, really a debt of gratitude for creating an iconic character that showed that women can be more than just a object of romance, an object of sex. Mm-hmm. A maiden to be rescued. She, you know, she was the third part of a triangle where, mm-hmm, every side was equal. I don't think there was a more important character than Luke, Han, and Leia in those movies. I think they were all equal.
They were the trinity of the Star Wars trilogy. And I mean, you can't have the movie with one of them missing. And she was so important to the success of that. And if they had gotten anybody different, I really don't think it would have been pulled off like it was. And I say that, you know, mainly not as a Star Wars fan, but as a Carrie Fisher fan, you know, she was perfect for that role. And just like Jesse said, she was a spitfire off on, you know, around the set when the cameras weren't rolling. And you could tell because she brought a lot of that into the character as well, because she was supposed to be this, you know, princess. And she was the first one to strap a blaster to her hip and say, hey, let's do this, you know? And
I just draw a circle around that whole rescue.
Because, yeah.
You know, just leading up to it, you know, the half a British accent, you know, the Madonna British.
Yeah,
And just some she doesn't have a whole lot to do in that first act. She basically mouths off and they walk her out of the room. That's it. That's what she does. You don't see her again other than when they blow up Alderaan. And in any case, she's fucking helpless, basically.
Mm-hmm.
She lies. She tries to get him to go to Dantooine and all that. You know, she's just, there's not a whole lot going on until that rescue sequence. And then she really does come alive.
What is the first thing she does in the rescue sequence? Even, you know, when she doesn't realize that they're to rescue her. She mouths off.
Yeah, aren't you a little short for a stormtrooper? And he was. Fag.
Mark's got some kind of weird. I don't know. Mean thing about Luke Skywalker.
This is a whiny brat. Oh, Skywalker is a bunch of.
He was whiny in the first movie, but then he came into his own.
His dad was whiny in a putz. Okay,
his dad was whiny in a putz because they did horrible casting.
No, that's not Hayden Christensen's fault. Okay,
it is in my world.
Okay, but though that does bring up a point that I wanted to mention really quick, because again, Carrie Fisher gets kind of, you know, shat on for being a lousy actress in the Star Wars movies. They all kind of do,
yeah.
You know, Harrison Ford, like no one really goes after Harrison Ford anymore because he's gone on to do a variety of really great projects. And it's like, okay, clearly he can act. Mark Hamill gets a lot of praise for his voice work, you know, most especially for the Joker.
Right.
So he kind of gets off the hook. But people think about like Carrie Fisher and Princess Leia, and it's like, oh, some of your acting and that's a little sketch. When you consider, again, the whole rescue sequence and how snappy that is, that couldn't have possibly been written by Lucas. That had to have been that whole sequence had to have been written by somebody else.
Yeah.
Well,
it's too good.
Did you guys get the sense from the Star Wars that she was a strong character in any way?
She got punched out
by a man. So yeah, well, I would agree that somebody had their hand in rewriting something from George Lucas there.
Gosh, you could have had like 30 squirrels jumping up and down on a keyboard and it would have been better than what he wrote.
So yeah, I agree. She brought something to that role. Obviously, she put that on the screen, and whoever had their hands in giving her those lines and direction.
Yeah, really quick, because I wanted to get this out, and I strayed from it, so I'll just say it right now. When you consider the fact that she got no acting direction from the director.
Yeah.
That basically George Lucas on the set of Star Wars was managing the special effects department and setting up the scenes and then giving nobody any feedback. Ronnie, have you like read and heard or like seen the documentaries on like the making of Star Wars and how basically, especially the prequels, poor Ewan McGregor was like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just honest. I'm on a green set here and I'm told the action's that way. And I'm like, I think it was him who said, this is not why I got into acting.
Yeah.
Well,
Lucas is just a god-awful director. I mean, there's no two ways about it.
There's not going to be a tribute to George Lucas on this show. It's going to be a video of me jumping up and down on his tombstone.
Oh, my God.
YouTube live.
Me fucking hitting his grave with a bat. Die, Lucas. Die again. I hate you. You're terrible. Anyway, third attempt. So he gave this woman, this young actress, no direction whatsoever. And she was still able to pull off a hell of an acting role.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really what I'm trying to say 20 minutes later. She gave that role, I wouldn't call it gravitas. That would be more of Liam Neeson in Phantom Menace. But she certainly brought an edge to that role. Mm-hmm. She really does make the rescue sequence watchable. Because she's the glue holding it together. And that's her performance. That's her delivery of those lines.
Yeah, absolutely. End of the shoot, flyboy.
Right.
You know,
this is some rescue.
Yeah. Yeah. And she's like she's cracking off shots. Mm-hmm. And I mean, she was like, okay, you look at the female characters of the time in the films of that time. I can't really, off the top of my head, name another strong female character in a movie.
I'm going to Google something really quick. Keep going.
Yeah. I mean, you think of the stuff in the 70s, it's like Barbarella. You know, unless you get into like the more of the exploitation movies, you know, but even then, it was, you had a kind of a strong female character, but she was still used as a sex symbol. Mm-hmm. You know, she was, her looks and sex scenes and stuff like that were still drawn upon to create who she was. Okay. Now,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, now, you know, she's in that movie, she's, you know, in all three movies, she's every nerd's, you know, fantasy or whatever you want to say, but look at why though. Because she knew how to do all these things, and she wasn't going to take crap from a Sith Lord, you know, of all people that could crush her skull with his hand. She was tortured. She was, you know, all, you know, this character and Carrie Fisher being who she is, and you know, and her talent, she brought that to life.
Yeah, she's kind of the archetype for like the perfect girlfriend. She's the cool girl, you know. She's like, she's not overbearing, but she's just, you know, but she's just cool enough to hang with everybody else, you know. And I think that's why, like, you know, when guys like talk about like what they like in a girl, they might actually subconsciously be drawing it from that character.
Right.
I'm not gonna say that person, because nope, but definitely, like, I think a lot of us who grew up with this sort, like Princess Leia, thought, that's a cool girl. That's a cool, that's a person I want to hang. That's a president I want to have a beer with. real quick, the highest grossing films of 1977, Star Wars, Smokey and the Bandit, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, The Goodbye Girl, Saturday Night Fever, you can tell by the way I use my walk, Oh God, A Bridge Too Far, The Deep, The Spy Who Loved Me, and Annie Hall.
I don't know much about Cannonball Run, so I can't remember. I know that was Sally Field, though, right?
Right.
Okay. I don't recall that being some breakout, strong female-led character there. Yeah.
Wait, did you say Cannonball Run, or did you say Smokey
and the Bandit?
Smokey and the Bandit. I'm sorry.
Cannonball Run was Farrah Fawcett, and you're not going to find a strong character, you know.
I don't know, man. ABBA the movie, that was some stiff competition there.
ABBA
the movie. Sally Field was kind of an afterthought in Smokey and the Bandit.
Yeah, I don't remember. It's been a while since I've seen that movie. As for the rest of them, yeah, I don't know.
Right.
I mean, it clearly, she transcended. This character transcended so much and was the blueprint for so many other characters, I think. You look at Princess Leia and you could see bits and pieces and many other, just like you said, she set the trend.
Yeah.
Because there are way more strong female led actresses, or excuse me, female led movies now. I don't want to, that's a cool thing. That's an awesome thing, actually. And there's a lot of movies. I don't know. You wouldn't say, I can't say that they're good or they're bad. But I mean, I think of Resident Evil. All of a sudden, I'm thinking of a bunch of video game movies because he said Lara Croft. Give me some other ones, Ronnie, like off the top of your head that you could think of where there was a female lead. Recent movies, whatever.
Man.
As he freezes up. Yeah,
put me on the spot.
See how I put you on the spot so I can go to Google and look it up?
Yeah, exactly.
okay, I mentioned...
For some reason, the first thing that pops in my head, Salt. No, God, no. Why? What would you do that, Ronnie?
All right, hey, let me save you.
Do it.
Because I mentioned it before, Alien.
Alien.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so that came out in 1979.
Right.
So that's 2 years later. And that, I would say, other than Princess Leia... as far as live action, you know, real life, cultural icon action women,
mm-hmm.
Ripley. But Ripley's up there more, I think, for Aliens than the first Alien. Have you ever watched Alien and really focused on that last act where she blows the xenomorph out the airlock?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's well done. No, I'm not debating that. I'm saying. That's not exactly rock'em sock'em action here.
Right.
Like the alien's taking a nap, and she's like sneakily trying to hit the button and not wake the thing.
Right.
You know, and then I think I don't remember the exact sequence of events, but eventually she's like, "Yeah," and the thing's just like, "Hey now," and now poof, out the window he goes.
I really want them to somebody to redub. Hey now into the xenomorph as the door opens, you know, and her thing za, you know, hey now,
the inner mouth pops out.
Yeah.
Hey now,
hey now.
Actually, I want the inner mouth to go, "What are you doing, Dave? This is highly irregular," and then go za out the window.
Oh, jeez!
But it's like to Aliens where she, you know, tied the Rambo head, you know.
Headband.
Thank you. Around her head, and just said, "Okay, let's whip some butt." You know,
no. Let's be honest. Ripley ain't shit until she gets into the loader.
Yeah,
and says, "Get away from her, you bitch!" And everybody came their pants.
I would have said cheered, but
I'm being correct.
I would have said cheered, but hey, you know who am I? But you know, you're right. I mean, she got in the loader, but you ask, you know, who paved the way for that? You know,
exactly.
It was Carrie Fisher. Mm-hmm. I mean, my goodness. She led the way for strong female action characters, in my opinion. Carrie Fisher was multi-talented, you know, singing, dancing, acting, whatever. And it's just a shame to see what she came through, and to succumb this early of an age.
I just want to throw this out there because we spend a lot of time talking about this one particular role, and we've had things here and there, but we have to talk about that last sequence with her and the Blues Brothers.
Oh my gosh, it's such an awesome sequence!
Yeah, go ahead, because I all I remember is her. Sort of panting with the gun in her hand.
Well,
so
she
go ahead, set it up.
She's the mystery woman, and she's trying to hunt down Jake Blues, and finally she gets to him, and she has an M16 in her hand, and I can't remember the exact, you know, the dialogue of the scene, but she's had enough. She's not going to take any more crap, you know. And she lays into him. You know, she fires warning shots around them. And they're like, "Whoa, whoa, 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 crazy lady!" You know. And it's such a funny, funny sequence to watch, and it was such a cool sequence to watch, you know, because you're looking at it, you're like, holy crap, that's Princess freaking Leia, you know, and she's got an M16 in her hand. Where did she get an M16, you know? It's just, there's not much to the part, but it's just so much fun.
It's so memorable.
Yeah, it really is.
And it's capped off with one of the greatest lines in the history of movie making, which is, there are 106 miles to Chicago. We have a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
Yep. And I'm a big Blues Brothers fan, so it's just topped it off.
I love that. It's dark out and we're wearing sunglasses.
And I mean, and I think at that point she was also kind of in a relationship with Dan Aykroyd too.
Was she?
Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
Oh, yuck.
Poor Dan.
Yeah. All right. I think there it is.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah, if you see that coming at you, fucking run.
She looks psychotic, man.
She looks a little crazy there, not going to lie.
Yep, you can see the bipolar in her eyes. I think we have talked this to death. Not to be funny or anything.
Poor choice.
Yeah. I'll boo myself on that one, even though it was unintentional.
Well-deserved boo.
I think my closing remarks, and I'll leave it to you guys, is don't just honor Carrie Fisher for her work as Princess Leia. Honor her for her whole career. She not only was an icon, but she was just a hell of a talent, a hell of a writer, a hell of a producer. You know, she was incredibly funny, incredibly talented. And maybe she would have, I think some of our best artists were, and I think that there was actually a study recently that confirmed this. Some of our best, most creative people in history were nuts. And maybe that's the Faustian bargain. Maybe that's why I can't get any success going. I'm not nuts enough. But you know, you have to be, you know, in these career fields where, you know, you're competing against so many other people, and you know, it's the very best of the cream rising to the top, or the one that the producer wants to sleep with. Either way, you have to be incredibly driven. You have to really, really push yourself and be willing to sacrifice. You know, the old "I lived in my car until I finally got my break." It's something I wasn't willing to do. But, you know, and obviously she had a lot of help from her parents, but still, it takes a certain mindset and a certain psyche to weather this. And even though she certainly had her tumultuous times, I think in order to really honor her, you should honor the full breadth of her career and all of its madness and all of its glory. Lastly, I didn't get teared up today because Princess Leia died. I didn't get upset because we would have no more Carrie Fisher in Star Wars movies. That was, you know, things happen. We lose actors, we lose musicians. I tend not to weep too much. I got upset because, number one, she had no business dying at 60. And it makes me sad. It makes me sad that she had ravaged her body so much that, you know, under a certain degree of circumstances, some of which we may never know, you know, the full breadth of, her body just said, "I quit. I'm done." It makes me sad. It makes me sad that we have people who lived to be 100 years old, who spent every minute of it being horrendous people, but we lose somebody as talented as Carrie Fisher at 60. It's not fair. But it also makes me sad because I just wanted her to get better.
Yeah.
I think that's why I love wishful drinking so much. Because as sort of sarcastic and as funny as it is, it was kind of her way of saying, look, I've been through the mill, but I got through it. And all I wanted for someone like her, or, you know, or anyone else that's had these troubles, is to get better. And I don't know how much of her life she got to truly appreciate being better before she was taken from this world. That's what makes me sad. That's what makes me regret. So again, it was never for me, rest in peace, Princess Leia. It's always going to be rest in peace, Carrie Fisher, for all the things you've done. And I'm sad for all the things you never got to do.
I'll step in here and say, you know, look at the best thing that you can do in order to honor or celebrate the life of Carrie Fisher is to look at her struggles and learn from them. That's the best thing you can do. Honor her any way you feel fit to, whether it be by going and watching your favorite movies with her in them. But please do not forget about what she had to go through and in order to bring that bit of entertainment to you. Research her career, research her activism, especially in the mental health field, as we mentioned here. It's so unfortunate because we didn't even mention this. I mean, two or three days ago, she was in the hospital, and then we heard she was in stable condition, and then we got to turn around, and then this is almost like one of those things where it's out of nowhere because we all thought everything was okay. She had a heart attack. Okay. She's in the hospital. She'll be fine because she's saying she's in stable condition. And then at 2 o'clock today or whenever I got the notification as it pops up on my phone, we find out that she'd passed away. And that is shocking to me. We never want to see anybody that we know, whether it be, I don't know Carrie Fisher personally, but by golly, she had a place in my heart through these films. And that's the case with millions of people around this world. So, that's about the best thing I can come up with. Ronnie, you got anything, you got anything else there that you'd like to say?
I don't distance myself from, but I try not to mourn celebrities too hard, because I still mourn them as people and as a loss. But the ones that I take to heart, the ones that I really are the ones that have had an impact in my life. As I was saying earlier, Prince had an impact in my life because his music was phenomenal, and you can just about name where you were when you heard each of these songs. You can go down the line, you know, I mean, shoot, Alan Thicke, he was one of the dads on TV, you grew up watching and all this. Carrie Fisher had a place in my heart, and she affected my life because she was, she played a role in a movie that, it still is very special to me and had a great deal to do with my childhood and adult life. Not because of the character, but because of who she is. And I learned more about her and by loving these movies, the author part of her, the struggles that she went through and all these different facets of her life and her talent. So, she truly is a loss to the world and to all of our lives.
All right. Mark, buddy, I'll let you take us out here. I don't know what your plans are for closing. If you just want to go ahead and leave it as is, I'm perfectly fine with that. How would you like to go?
I'm just going to make a recommendation. if you've never read Wishful Drinking, It's available on Amazon. You can get a Kindle. You can get a hardcover. You can get a paperback. Get it on Audible. Whatever floats your boat. But read it. She's really funny. It's really worth the time. And then when you're done with that, watch the special, Wishful Drinking. As I said before, I think it's rentable through YouTube. If you have HBO, it's streamable, available on demand. It's a great way to sort of get to know this non Princess Leia side of her.
Yeah.
It's definitely worth the time. And I don't really want to plug anything else. That I wanted to really dedicate all this time to her. So, I have not read Shockaholic or, The Princess Diarist. They are now on my wish list, on Amazon, and the next opportunity I can, I'm going to pick those two up, but I did read Wishful Drinking and I can't recommend it enough. If you're interested, if you're not so much interested in her life necessarily, but you're interested in what else she's done, book I did end up reading a while back. And it was funny because I actually picked it up in the bookstore because I saw that she had written it. I was like, oh, cool. Princess Leia wrote this. Delusions of Grandma. And I remember, you know, as somebody who gave up reading fiction after 9/11 for the most part, obviously I read comic books, but I mean novel fiction. This I remember being really funny. If you haven't had an opportunity to see it or rent it, read Postcards from the Edge, see the movie with, I believe it's Glenn Close.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very funny stuff. And again, the page out of her life. So don't just, I mean, obviously, you know, honor her in the manner you see fit, but you know, expand your horizons, give the woman's full career a look at. It's worth your time. That's it. That's all I got.
All right. Well, I want to thank everybody out there for joining us tonight in this tribute to Carrie Fisher. you can catch this episode later on down the road if you so wish so on the Rattlesnake Broadcasting Network as well. Thank you very much for joining us. Everybody have a great night.